Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into a brand new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can find me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. It has been far too long, and I mean far too long, since I've had the pleasure and great opportunity to chat with my good friends, Perry Goldstein and Grant Bills. You can find her, of course, on Packs What She Said and on social media at Perry_Goldstein. You can find him at Wisco Grant, one of the great Twitter handles in all of Packer sports. Grant, Perry, how the heck are you doing, my friends?
Doing good. Doing really good. It was kind of nice to enjoy a football Sunday without needing to be like locked in for 3 hours for a Packer game. So I also don't love coming home on a Thursday night and immediately needing to lock in, but it was kind of nice to be able to chill and relax this weekend a little bit.
Agreed on both accounts. Perry, how are you?
Good. I second that. The Sunday has been very chill. I've gotten to leisurely enjoy, but also if I want to go out and do some other things that I need to do on my Sunday, I can step away from the TV and miss some football, and that's all right too. I guess to your point about Thursday night football, that's one of the perks of the Eastern time zone. It's a little bit later that I still have time after work. I don't normally love watching sports on the Eastern time zone, but maybe that's one thing that I have over you guys.
True.
Central time zone is the best time zone for sports. Central's the best. There's no question about it. Either you get East is you get too late, Pacific, you get way too early at times. Like the one thing Central gets, we don't even get mentioned. It's either going to be 8 p.m. Eastern or, 5 p.m. Pacific. We don't even get mentioned when things are going to be on, but it's by far and away the best time to watch sports.
It just seems natural. Noon, 3 o'clock, 7 o'clock. I don't know. That should be the measuring stick for every other time zone, but whatever.
It really should be. It's the best. There's no debate about it. All right, Perry and Grant, let's get to some results from Sunday. You had Aaron Rodgers and the Jets falling to 3-10 on the season. You had the Vikings embarrassing, really, the Atlanta Falcons moving to 11-2 on the season. Eagles escaping the Panthers, almost a late touchdown to put the Panthers ahead, but it was incomplete, just barely. Eagles moved to 11-2. Seahawks defeat the Cardinals in pretty impressive fashion. We'll talk about the Seahawks more a little bit later. Rams defeat the Bills in one of the huge upsets of the day and looked extremely impressive on offense while doing so, scoring 44 as the Bills had 42 in that game. Really fun game. 49ers embarrassed and beat the Bears 38-13, and the Buccaneers went ahead in the NFC South standings, beating the Raiders 28-13. Perry, I will start with you. What was your big takeaway from our Sunday slate of action?
Well, there's a few. There's things that impact the Packers, and then there's just me as a football fan enjoying some things, right? So one is, the flip between the Falcons and the Bucks, because it's quite possible, depending on the way the Packers' schedule shakes out, that they go play that seed. So whether they play the Falcons or the Bucks, naturally that completely changes everything. You're going to Tampa or you're going to Atlanta, two places that the Packers have a lot of history at, two very different teams, two very different quarterbacks, both who are familiar. So just a really interesting division to keep an eye on. I do feel like it's the Bucks to win. They just look like they're playing better football than the Falcons are. The arrow is pointing up on the Bucks and the arrow is pointing down on the Falcons. I was naturally, of course, rooting for the Falcons to beat the Vikings. That was not the best wish for my day. Just obviously keeping an eye on that. And then you said it, we'll talk about the Seahawks Cardinals, so we can put a pin in that. Interesting to see the Bills get toppled by a team like the Rams who haven't been playing that well, but also the NFC West is wide open. So you continue to win in that division, you can take it. It's not by any means over. But my personal biggest takeaway of the day, which I blue skied, I don't know what the verb is for blue sky, it's not tweet, is that it's very clear at this stage in the season what bad teams, and by bad teams, I mean sub 500 are definitely not making the playoffs, are still playing with heart and with grit, and which teams have completely given up. The Jets have completely given up, right? The Bears a little bit today. I'm like, y'all have completely given up. But the Panthers, man, the Panthers have not given up. And I just love watching a team that has absolutely nothing to play for on the season, but is still giving it 100. It's awesome, especially for like Bryce Young. He got benched. He's back. Like, you can tell that team is playing for him, and they still feel like we have something to gain from playing well. So more power to you, Panthers. I'm into it.
All right, Grant, I love a lot of those. I want to hit on a couple of those in just a minute, but Grant, I'll give you the floor first. What were your big takeaways in this one?
Quickly off Perry, it's better if Bryce Young is good. I just think that's more interesting for football fans at large. It's more interesting games, and number one overall picks being good is good for football and good for football watchers. Shout out to the Bucks. Your point, you brought up the Bucks. I kind of left the Bucks for dead, and maybe that was dumb of me to do, but they lost four in a row. They lost by 10 to Baltimore. They lost by 5 to Atlanta. They lost in overtime to Kansas City without touching the ball. And then they lost by 3 to the Niners when the Niners were in better shape than they are now. And at that point, they were 4-6. And while the bottom never really fell out on any of those games, like, you could tell it's a tough team that would fight. I'm like, man, 4-6 and without their star receivers, they've won 3 in a row since then. So like, I had kind of written that team off, and I thought losing 4 in a row and losing some star power wide receiver, but they have a lot of heart and gut. And I guess that matches their coach and their quarterback. So I'm glad that you mentioned them, Perry. The Vikings, I watched most of that game today and thought they're just really good. They're really talented. They're dynamic. O'Connell's awesome, which we knew, right? And Flores is awesome, which we knew. But there were a couple of moments today where Darnold he threw up balls that looked like prayers. You know what I mean? Where it's like he's scrambling, he's falling away, and he just hoists the ball up, and you kind of feel like it's going to be a 50-50 ball. And there's Addison or there's Jefferson in the perfect spot. And then a defensive back for Atlanta is like facing the wrong way and running. Like, they just looked clueless. And that scares me. Not that I wasn't scared by the Vikings coming into today, but I couldn't help but watch that game thinking, I could see our cornerback room putting together a reel like that of plays in a playoff game. And that
never.
That was my thought, because I'm worried about this cornerback room. I've been worried since the beginning of the year. So it was hard to not watch the Vikings game today and think, man, like, if they have a couple plays like that in a playoff game, like, that's the difference between, you know, winning a loss or going home and advancing. So that was, I think, my most Packers-centric takeaway. A lot of interesting games, but I think that one most made me think of the Packers today, Andy.
Yeah, I just want to go back to the Panthers for a second. Obviously never would happen in a billion years. If they would have won today against the Eagles, like, I think I would have made an argument for like Dave Canales as coach of the year with winning four games, like, and not a real legitimate one. Like, there's obviously ones that would win it. Like I said, it's not, but like, that might be four more wins than I would have expected them to have this season. And including a win against the Eagles at this point of the year, like, he's been really impressive in a 3-10 season, which is not something that you can say out of most head coaches, but I really like what he's doing there. And like, I literally thought that there was a really strong chance that the Panthers would win zero games this year. And to your point, Perry, not only are they like annoying, but they're trending in the right direction. Bryce Young's playing much better. Adam Thielen's having a resurgence. Like, it's just, it's a pesky team to play against. And I never thought I would have said that about the Panthers at this point. And then obviously both of you touched on the Minnesota Vikings. One, I do think the Falcons are just a very, very bad football team. That's kind of been disguised as maybe a little bit better. I will say this, and I tweeted this out today. The difference between the $10 million Sam Darnold and like the $180 million Kirk Cousins could not be more stark in the fact, I think somebody posted like in the last 4 weeks or something like that, it's like 7 touchdowns, no picks for Sam Darnold and 0 touchdowns, like 8 interceptions for Kirk Cousins, something like that. It's like something absolutely crazy between the two. And it is just a unbelievable difference. And you would think that the one that got paid the most would be the one that would be tearing it up in that situation, but it's really not. So here's the stat. The last four games, Darnold, 11 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. So 11-0. Kirk Cousins, 0 touchdowns, 8 interceptions is that. So like, that is a unbelievable statistic. Kirk looks gone. I don't know if it's like the second year, like the year coming off the Achilles or what it might be, but he does not look good at all. He does not look comfortable in that offense. And meanwhile, Sam Darnold, very, very impressive for Minnesota. That leaves your NFC playoff picture as of tonight, as we're recording this, Lions at 1, Eagles at 2, Seahawks at 3, Buccaneers at 4, Vikings at 5, Packers at 6, Commanders at 7, which would leave you with Commanders at Eagles in the first round, Packers at Seahawks in the first round, interestingly enough, and then Vikings at Buccaneers. The team that is just outside at number 8 would be the LA Rams at 7-6. Remember, the Packers are at 9-4. So Green Bay has a 2-game lead on the next team out, which is 7-6. They're the only team that is out that is at 7-6. Everyone else is 6-7 or worse. And remember, Green Bay also has the tiebreaker with the Rams because they beat them earlier this season. So with 4 games to go, they're basically 3 games up on their next, nearest wild card team, or that the one that would potentially knock them out of the playoffs, right? I do have some bad news, though. The Packers doubled their odds of being eliminated from the playoffs after Sunday's slate of action. They went from a 99% chance of making the playoffs to a 98% chance of making the playoffs after Sunday's slate of games. So there previously was a 1% chance that the Packers would miss the playoffs. That has doubled completely to 2%. So there is some bad news on this Sunday.
You really actually got me with that one. I was like, what is this?
They doubled it. The odds that the Packers miss the playoffs has doubled after today. It's not ideal, Perry. It's not ideal.
You are technically not wrong, Andy Herman.
You should make one of those really misleading graphs, line graphs, that makes it look drastic until you look at the scale of the y-axis and it's like 2%.
It's actually going to be the thumbnail for today's episode. Packers double chances of missing the playoffs on Sunday or something. Just ridiculous. But no, obviously Green Bay's in a phenomenal spot, and it is going to be interesting to see how the seeding plays out. And again, Packers, as of right now, would be Packers-Seahawks, which of course is the game coming up this Sunday. And it's like sort of interesting in this dynamic, and we'll get into this a little bit later. But, if you win this, obviously you have a better chance to move to the 5. See, I do think the 5 is better, obviously, for a couple of reasons. I think I would rather go against the NFC South than the NFC West, which is probably what would happen in this scenario. Like Seahawks or Rams on the road is not ideal. Tampa on the road, I don't think is like the best case scenario, but it's like that it's probably the best case scenario of what you're actually going to get, right? Or somehow maybe Atlanta comes back. Like even that would be a pretty good scenario. So I do think having the 5 is better for that. But also, based on what you're saying today, Grant, and I don't disagree with you, it would not stun me. All right. So let's just play this out for a second. In order for the Packers to get to the NFC Championship game, right? In all likelihood, the path that they would take would be, you know, some form of, going through the NFC West or whatever. If they're the 5 seed and they win that game, then they would probably go to, you know, potentially their Detroit or Philly. Minnesota being that other team, if Green Bay is at the 5 and Minnesota's at the 6, it wouldn't like completely stun me of Minnesota being able to go through the wild card and then Minnesota being able to go to Detroit and win against Detroit. And in that situation, if Green Bay won both of their games, you could theoretically end up with a Packers Vikings game in Green Bay if you were the 5 and they were the 6. So not maybe the likeliest, but I'd much rather play that game in Green Bay than I would in Minnesota at that point. So it's not like the craziest scenario in the world if those things came to fruition as well.
I hadn't pondered that. I think the Packers, and I've never like the last, well, I don't know, last 10 or 15 years, I don't know that this Packers team, this organization has been built like a cold weather team. We talk about it, like they practice in it, and that's an advantage when you're playing against other warm market teams. But Josh Jacobs is kind of the difference for them this year, right? Like I think Jordan Love can sling it just fine in the cold. He said before the Thanksgiving game in his presser, when they asked, do you like playing in the cold? And Jordan Love was like, it's fine. Like, I'd rather play in a dome, but it's not like he didn't give some, he didn't give some bleeding heart speech about how he loves playing in the cold. But Josh Jacobs is the difference. It's like, well, we'll just give him the ball 25 times. We'll slow the game way down. And I do think they have that pitch up their sleeve if they're able to play a playoff game at home and against the Vikings. Like you said, Andy's probably the only route that could take.
Yep.
I mean, my ideal scenario is that Atlanta comes back because there's still plenty of games left. Like a lot can happen and Atlanta can come and take that division back and have this go, at least the wild card go through Atlanta, because they're certainly in this picture, like the weakest link. And we will naturally see next week how the Packers fare against the Seahawks. I could change my mind after watching if they, you know, defeat them handedly or not, or if it's a close game, but I would rather have the Packers go to, the least formidable opponent. And at the moment, it in this hunt, it would be Atlanta. that's how I feel about it. The rest of the idea of the Packers though playing either NFC North team in the rest of the playoffs is an interesting one though, because I just find like divisional opponent games are always wonky and they're always going to be closer than you want them to be.
Yep.
Lions in particular, I think it's incredibly hard to beat a team three times. I know that's an adage that gets thrown around a lot, but it is like you have a lot on the other team. But we'll see how the Packers do against the Vikings coming up. Lambeau Field should be a difference maker. Like if I was another team, I would be rooting for a dome team to be having the home field advantage versus having to go play outside, period.
So just to bring you back on the Falcons thing for just a moment, three of the four games remaining for the Falcons, Raiders, Giants, Panthers. Raiders, Giants, Panthers are on that Falcons schedule. The other one is at Washington. So that's definitely a tougher matchup, but like not completely losable, right? So now they're on a four-game losing streak, the Falcons are. They have not looked good at all against, you know, some like Denver, Los Angeles Chargers, and Minnesota over the last three. Like those are tougher opponents, but still three very winnable games against the Raiders, Giants, and Panthers, two of which are at home. Not unthinkable. I'm now curious to see what the Buccaneers schedule looks like. They have they're at the Chargers, at the Cowboys. They also have the Panthers, and then they have the Saints. So Chargers and Commanders games are tough ones for each of these teams, but the rest of the game the schedule is pretty easy for both teams too. It'll be interesting. I'm intrigued.
You said the Falcons, and I can't remember if you said this. I think you said this after we started recording. I don't think you said this before, but you think the Falcons have been a lesser team kind of masquerading as winning team. Is that a talent? Like you think some of their talent is overrated, or is that just Kirk Cousins, or is that coaching? Like what is exactly your thought on who the Falcons are?
Yeah, I think Kirk Cousins as of late has just not looked like himself. I don't think their defense is any good. You mentioned the corners spiraling around. I think they're a few pieces away clearly on defense right now. And then again, on offense, I just can't take him totally serious with the way that Kirk Cousins is playing. Now, if Kirk Cousins all of a sudden finds his way to, you know, where he was a solid to good quarterback, and you've got Bijan Robinson, Drake London, you know, Kyle Pitts, like all these guys, and they actually click on all cylinders. But we have not seen that from this Falcons team more often than not. And meanwhile, the defense to me just isn't good enough. And they just don't scare me at all at the moment.
They have Simmons and Terrell. Like they have some players on the back end. It's not like that should be the stronger part of their defense. I don't know. The funny thing about Kirk is even when he's not like physically slinging it, I think Drake London is awesome. And yet on so many like gotta have it plays, the ball's going to Ray McLeod, which just seems like so Kirk Cousins. Cause that's, I kind of felt like that's for long stretches in Minnesota. It's like, oh, the ball is going to, who was their fullback? I can't even remember. Like CJ Ham, it's fourth and eight. And he's throwing a 4-yard, you know, little out to CJ Ham. Shout out and CJ, I know fantasy football's like poisoned our brains, but like, just if nothing's going well, just throw it up to Drake London. Like stop trying to fit it in a keyhole to Ray McLeod or whoever.
You got to fit it to Ray McLeod when you can. You cannot take advantage of that Ray McLeod matchup. I think Kirk has Ray McLeod in fantasy, which is why this is all happening. All right, you guys ready for some fact or fiction? All right, Perry Grant and I are going to be doing a little Packers fact or fiction. We'll rotate around. We're each going to say a statement. We're each going to say three of them through the course of the show here. And then the other two people get to decide if that statement is in fact a fact or if it is completely and utterly fiction. Perry Goldstein, would you like to start off with your first statement?
Sure. I'm going to preface this by saying I'm very excited about Grant's.
Grant built it like
Grant,
he built
Grant this talk, and, Grant talked these game. Up, so I'm ready for
I'm
it.
I'm excited about mine, too.
Where do I want to take this first? I'm also just curious to see where all of our thoughts were, but I'll start with this one. The Packers' defensive struggles can be fixed by their injured players returning.
Hey friends, we are smack dab in the middle of holiday season, and there's only one thing better than the spirit of giving, and that's the spirit of winning. And right now you can make your holidays bigger and brighter with Prize Picks, the absolute best place to get real money action while watching your favorite sports. This holiday season, Prize Picks is giving away two free picks in December, and they're giving away $30+ million in rewards during Picksmas. Sign up today and get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive that $50 bonus. It is guaranteed. Now, Do you think James Cook is going to have more than 60 yards next week? Joe Burrow, more than 1.5 touchdowns? Whatever you think, Prize Picks is the best way to win real money this football season, and you can turn your sports opinions into real money in fewer than 60 seconds. This week, I'm going with a huge bounce back week for Jaden Reed after catching 0 passes last week. Don't see that happening again. I'm also going with Brandon McManus to make multiple field goals on the road in Seattle. I'm also going to be keeping an eye on Josh Allen versus the Lions as well. Whoever you want to pick, make sure you download the app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after your first $5 lineup. What are you waiting for? Prize Picks. Run your game. Hey everyone, with the holidays creeping up faster than your great aunt's fruitcake recipe, I've got something way better to share with you. If you want to look sharp for all those festive gatherings and maybe finally win that best groomed at the family dinner award, check out the latest masterpiece from Manscaped, the Chairman Pro Electric Foil Shaver. Trust me, it's like Rudolph for your face, guiding you to a smooth, irritation-free shave. Head over to manscaped.com and join the over 11 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by using code PACKADAY for 20% off plus free shipping. Now, you may have recently seen Mustache Andy lately. It was a beautiful sight to behold, and that wouldn't have been possible without the Chairman Pro's Flex Adjust technology, which is basically like the holiday miracle of shaving. And when I needed even more precision to get that mustache look just right, there was the Precision Lock. And when you lock it in, the blade head sits firm so you can achieve a more precise shave, and that's exactly what I did. So get the Chairman Pro today and experience a shave that is as smooth as you deserve. Get 20% off plus free shipping with code PACKADAY at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code PACKADAY at manscaped.com. What are you waiting for? All right. I'll start. Grant's thinking over there. I'm going to say that that is a fact. I'm going to say that if they did get fully healthy, they will fix the primary struggles that they have. And I think that starts with Jair. I think without having Jair, they've not been able to play the defense that they've wanted to, because they have to use their safeties to cover for their corners a little bit more. And by doing so, you can't drop an extra safety in the box quite as often, which opens up a lot of the failures in the middle of the field that we've been seeing, which also get buoyed by the fact that Edgerrin Cooper comes back. And now you have, I think, your best linebacker combo with Quay and Cooper playing together and still maybe playing McDuffie on some early downs where he's looked good, but on passing downs, he's looked very, very bad. I also think we've seen this run defense play much better run defense over the course of the last month plus of the season. Like, they've been legitimately really good. And I think that, again, that middle of the field, you know, we haven't really seen them get beat on the outsides by Amon-Ra St. Brown, Jameson Williams, Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle. Like, they've held their own, but a lot of that's been because, again, they've had to use the safeties to help a little bit on the outsides as well. So I think Ja getting back allows you to drop the safety more, covers up the middle of the field. The run defense looked good. Kenny Clark's coming off his best game. Rashawn Gary continues to at least trend in the right direction, if not being able to completely play the way that he wants. So I am going fact. That is a fact.
I will say fact for all the same reasons Andy just said it. But the reason that that doesn't make me feel like that should make me feel better, right? When I watch this defense give up 30 plus again to a team above them in the standings, as they've done with the Eagles and the Vikings and the Lions, like saying, oh, they just need to get healthy and they'll be fine. That should make me feel better. The problem is if Jair comes back, like, why? And I'm not trying to be a jerk, but like, why should I assume he's going to stay back, right? Or like with Edgerrin Cooper, because he's had some soft tissue injuries. Yep. And it, like, coming into the NFL, it's going to be hard. Like, playing a level up from college, like getting your body used to that. Like, I'm not blaming either one of these guys, but if Edgerrin Cooper and Jair come back on Sunday, like, I can't just sit there and say, oh, well, then we're good for the rest of the year, because the percentages or the odds will probably tell us they'll get hurt again, and then we'll be back in the same spot. So I think just yes, with those two, that would solve a lot of their problems, but that doesn't make me feel any better. And I know that wasn't your question, but I'll add that to what Andy said.
Starting to caveat already.
You can answer however you want. Now, I meant to caveat at the beginning. It's those who can come back. Like, we saw Javon Bullard leave the last game on crutches. I'm not saying I expect Javon Bullard to be back in the Seahawks game and like that will magically fit. That's not what I'm saying in this. The players that we believe to come back. I think, Andy, you hit the nail on the head. That's pretty much what I was thinking. But along Grant's lines of like, does that make me feel better? I think the Packers should have had a contingency plan in both of those areas.
Yep.
Like, with the idea that players get hurt. This is the NFL. And if your entire defense, like the trickle down and domino effect of losing one player in Jaire Alexander, is this great, you didn't plan well enough for this season.
I put a podcast out a couple of weeks ago now that they just struck out at corner, right? Like they believe that Jaire would be able to stay healthy. He hasn't. They believe that Eric Stokes would be able to come back and maybe play like he did as a rookie and be the legitimate star. He has not. They believe that Keyshawn Nixon could be a really good, you know, starting slot corner. I'm closer to that one. Like he's been a solid, okay-ish, like number three corner, but they've had to play him as a number one corner, which is again, why it's been so bad. But I think if he was your number three, you'd probably be okay. Then they basically bet that Carrington Valentine would take a big jump. And we just haven't really seen that, right? Kind of looks like the same Carrington Valentine that we saw previously. And maybe they bet that somebody else somewhere, whether it be Corey Ballantyne or Kalen King or a random free agent that Goody was going to be able to pull off of somebody's practice squad, something would be able to maybe step. They have not found that either. So they've kind of struck out in every single phase of their cornerback room. And I still think it's workable if you're healthy. I think Jaire on the outside with whether it's Nixon or Valentine on the outside and then Bullard in the slot. Like I think that is a workable secondary, especially when you've got Evan Williams and McKinney that are there, but you need, as of right now, Evan Williams, Jaire Alexander, and Javon Bullard all not healthy, at least coming off the last game, right? And that's a major question mark. And to some extent, they did strike out at corner. All right, Grant, you talked a lot of game. You got the next one. What's your first fact or fiction statement here?
I have a Christian Watson one. I'm not gonna do my favorite one first, the one I'm most excited about. I'm gonna do this one. Fact or fiction. Packers fans shouldn't penalize Christian Watson nearly as much as they do for the worst two or three plays that he's had through his first two and a half seasons on the team.
Oh, fact. I mean, Christian Watson has been one of the most, I think, at least this season, now that he's been healthy, reliable receivers on the team. I've been touting, like, from every platform I have, like get him more touches, because I think when he has the ball in his hands, he does good things. I think the reason why people get so up in arms about Christian Watson is two things. One is you're already at that point with him because he's been so injured over the course of his season. So he has a much shorter leash. And two, as a deep ball threat, like you're always going to have some of those issues connecting or some of the, you know, not every single like amazing deep ball threat catches 100% of those really difficult throws. So you naturally just harp on the bad drops versus all of the good that he has done. In the last, I think it's three or four games, he's two of those games, he's had over 150 yards. Like he is a major contributor of this offense and a huge reason why this offense is having the success that they are, including Josh Jacobs, naturally. I think we can all caveat that, but from like a receiving perspective. So he does not deserve as much slack as he gets.
The Christian Watson hate is always slightly amusing to me because do you know how many drops he has this year and last year?
Well, he had, until the San Francisco game, I think PFF had him at zero.
Yeah.
He has one drop this year. He had two last year. So, like, we heard his drop percentage is fantastic over the last 2 years. Like, I get, like, I mean, when your opening moment in your career is an 80-yard drop, like, you know, it would be 80-yard touchdown drop, like, to start, like, very first play of your career, there's going to be a little bit of, I guess, people just keeping that with you for forever. But over the last 2 years, he has not had anywhere near a drop issue. So I'll start there. The other thing is like from an injury issue. Yes. Christian Watson has clearly missed some games. I don't think I'm breaking any news there. I haven't gone and counted it up exactly. My guess, I mean, he's, I think missed maybe one game this year, you know, probably, you know, five or six last year, maybe four or five the year before that, something in that. If Christian Watson in his rookie season, right before in like training camp, had tore his ACL for a year, right? And then came back and played the entire 2023 and the entire 2024 with not missing a game, he would have had more lost time on that 1 year torn ACL than he has in his 3 years of his career so far. Like, yes, it's been annoying at times that he's been in and out of a lineup and you want him to stay healthy. And for the most part, he really has this year outside of taking a free hit on an interceptable ball to Minnesota, which is not, there's nothing he can do about that. There's literally nothing he can do about that. He has not actually been that banged up and he has actually not had that many drops. Now, again, if you're looking at a high-end second-round pick and you're hoping for a little bit more ROI, okay, fine, whatever. But he's been a good player. He's an unbelievably unselfish player. He's not somebody that's constantly demanding the ball. He's a really good blocker on the outside. He does all the little things. By all accounts, he's like the, you know, consummate professional in the locker room. Like, he is a value add for this team all day, every day. So whatever it is, the reason that people are hating on Christian Watson, for the most part, it's pretty ridiculous.
I just think it's probably because the bad moments are so... And I think that's luck. You know what I mean? Like, I almost think that's bad luck. Like, you drop a, the Minnesota drop was bad. And I like banged a drum for 2 months that season. It's like, if Watson doesn't drop that ball, like that season goes differently, in my opinion. Like, I think that set them on a path. I think that set Rodgers and his perspective and just the mindset, the aura of that team on a path. But that's, I don't know. That's, I just think I read tweets and I read comments and I take calls on the radio shows and people, like, the things that people say about Christian Watson, you would never expect. Like, if you just took someone and sat him down here, like, watch this guy play, watch his highlights, watch his tape. And then you would tell them, like, this is what people think of him. Like, I just don't think it matches up. So I think it's two or three plays and they've been bad, but I just think he gets a little bit of a raw deal from fans, certainly.
Yeah, he's missed, I think, 12 games. I just counted it up really quick. I think he's missed 12 games in his career, which again is less than if you missed a season with like an ACL injury. So all right, let's move on. All right, I'm going to give my first one. Fact or fiction, Jaden Reed needs to have a much bigger role within the Packers offense.
Do you want to take this one, Grant, first? Or you want me to go?
Yeah, I can go first. We can mix it up. So I think Jaden Reed is awesome. He's great. He also has dropped a decent number of balls. I'm not ripping on Jaden Reed, but like, again, going back to Christian Watson, Packers fans act like he drops every other pass, but everyone else in the, you know, in the receiving room, like, oh, they would never drop a pass. Well, Dobbs and Reed are like near the top of the league if you look at PFF or, you know, whatever database. And we know about Wicks, but let's set him to the side. So Reed has hurt himself a little bit in that way. I also have gone back and forth with lots of people who call our shows or comment on our radio shows. And it seems every other week, Packers fandom is upset about a different guy who wasn't involved. Right? Like, for a while it was Christian Watson. Why is he not involved? And then it was Tucker Kraft had a couple weeks where he didn't. And then this last week it was Reed. And the song that I've kind of been singing is, well, when this team is playing their correct brand of football, Jordan Love's probably throwing the ball about 25 times, probably. So that leaves maybe 20 or slightly fewer completions, depending on the game. They have a lot of guys, right? And there's just not, because they're a run first team. And when they're playing well, they possess the ball. So there's fewer possessions in the game and there's fewer passing. Like, there's just going to be guys week to week who are left out. And I just think if every week we get mad that one guy didn't get targets, we're missing the big picture of, well, the other guys did. And that's kind of how the offense works. So I think Jaden Reed is awesome, but every once in a while, there's going to be a guy who just doesn't fit or doesn't perform in a given week. And that's going to include even Jaden Reed. I don't think he's above that.
I think there's two things I want to talk to in this one. Need is a really interesting word to use, because to Grant's point, like, would it be great if Jaden Reed had a stretch now in this part of the season where he went off? Of course. But I don't know if it necessarily needs to be him, but it needs to be someone on the offense who's going to step up and have big games. Do we believe that Jaden Reed is capable of that if he gets the targets? Absolutely, 100%. Do I think it needs to be him? Nope. Like, it can be any one of those other guys. And to Grant's point, that's the way that this offense works. The other thing I want to say is, I think contributions is also something that needs to be put into perspective, right? And we've talked a lot about how this has now become a very run heavy, run first team. And contributions also include blocking. Like, contributions include, like, what is your 111th? Your 111th as a receiver in this team, on this team, isn't always just run your route, catch the ball. It is a lot of blocking for Josh Jacobs. And so if Jaden Reed is in there catching blocks, so Josh Jacobs gets 4, 5, 6, however many extra yards, he is contributing and he doesn't need to do any more other than what the coaching staff and this team is asking him to do. So does he need to be doing more? I mean, would I love to see him have a big game because he hasn't had one in a while? Sure. But no, I don't think he needs to be doing more because I think he is contributing a ton. It just doesn't always look like what you want it to be in the pass game.
It's a really interesting conversation, and I can kind of go back and forth both ways. My answer to this question all season long has been basically word for word for what Grant has said. Is like, we're going to do this every single week because every week it's like, well, Christian Watson wasn't involved in this game, or like, what? Why didn't Romeo Doubs get the ball? Like, why did Josh Jacobs only get 14 carries in this game? Why did Jaden Reed only get one target? Like, it's literally, why did Tucker Kraft only get, you know, one catch in that game a couple weeks ago or whatever it was? Like, we can do this every single week. That being said, I also do feel like, and I love Zach Cruz's, you know, idea of like the three psychos on this team of Jaden Reed, Tucker Kraft, Josh Jacobs. Those kind of are the three players that I want the ball in their hands the most. And I do feel like you have to have a little bit of intentionality of trying to get the ball in their hands, not as much as possible, but certainly when you can. It's not like saying like, you've got Devontae Adams, so you better get him the ball every single play, right? But I'm giving you three options here in Jacobs, Reed, and Kraft. And it feels like those three should be maybe a little bit more targeted. And I don't think you should really probably ever get to the end of the game with Jaden Reed having one target. And technically it was two, by the way, because he drew a big pass interference penalty early in that game. So that's another thing we can talk about as well. But, you know, it's still, you should not probably end up with him not having a catch or run in an entire game. That probably is a little bit too far in the direction of, well, whatever happens, happens. Like, we're okay with it. It could be anybody. I think you have to have a little bit more intentionality to it than that. But my overarching feel is still like, we could do this every week. And I'm happy if whoever is eating and they're putting up 30 plus points, which again, they did this week without Jaden Reed having a catch or a rush in this game. I'm not super concerned about it. And I still think there's multiple ways to peel an onion on this one. I don't think that's a real, you know, sort of saying, but I'm going to say it anyway. Yeah, I do think that I don't know. It's a really tough answer. I could go either way. I'll end where I started.
I also think matchups matter and the venue matters. Like, I think games into, and this is kind of why I like this Packers team. Like, they can play on a fast track. They can play in a dome. And I think Watson's great in that spot. And I think Wicks, if he starts to catch the ball, is great in that spot just because he's such a smooth, natural move. He's like a basketball player, right? So you get him in a controlled environment, he can really hurt you. I think Jaden Reed, I think all of these guys can play in all environments, obviously, but Jaden Reed probably, I think his skill set can be better utilized. He can be a more punishing yards after the catch player when you're outside. So in Seattle, if it's chillier, when Green Bay hosts Chicago later in the season, like, I think those are games where you might, okay, let's look to be in a little bit more control. Let's not just leave it up to God completely. Like, let's see if we can't be a bit more intentional outside about getting Jaden Reed the ball. Cause I think his skill set, I think probably lends itself to being a more punishing physical player outside versus in a dome. So that's always something to consider too. And you know, defensive coordinators, they're going to work to take certain guys away. So there are some, you know, parts of target distribution that are just out of the control of even an offensive coordinator and a quarterback, but there are lots of factors at play. And I think inside outside is one for a player like Jaden Reed.
Fair enough. Just by the way, Christian Watson, 8 drops in his career, Jaden Reed, 9 drops this season. So just when we talk about like which players got like the, like, oh, Christian Watson drops everything, he actually has one less drop in his career than Jaden Reed just has this season. I'm going to do just a follow-up one really quick because it's so related to the one right now. So sorry if we're going out of order here a little bit, but I'm just going to follow up really quickly because we can probably get two of these out of the way right away. The follow-up is fact or fiction, the Packers need a number one wide receiver.
No, we're not having this conversation again. I mean, it goes to the same conversation you both just had. And like, I echo it. I don't feel the need to rehash it, but I think this offense is special because they have so many weapons and they can game plan against whomever it is they're seeing on the opposing side with the number of different weapons they have and mix and match. I do think that over the course of the season, like, we've seen them really lean on Josh Jacobs and then they kind of go from there. Which makes for a really interesting, like, back to your last one, like contribution distribution from the wide receivers. But this offense works at its best when you look at the stat sheet at the end of a game and you see like five or six guys getting receptions, but it's all like 2 to 5. Because then you have defensive coordinators having to game plan for everybody. And Jordan Love can go through his reads and just figure out who's open. And I think that's when this offense looks its most beautiful.
Perfectly said.
So I agree with all of that. And I don't think they need a number one wide receiver, but there's something in that neighborhood that I do think they could use, right? Like third down, got to have it. Fourth down, got to have it. Red zone, got to have it. I don't – like I watch the Vikings, even with Addison and Jefferson. And Jefferson probably the best wide receiver in football. So like, oh, shoot, I wish they had Justin Jefferson, obviously. But like watching Sam Darnold today just kind of able to, well, screw it. Like I'll give him a chance to make a play because nothing else is open. Like I think there's value in that. And I think there's value in when the offense feels aimless. And I think the offense felt aimless a little bit at the beginning against Detroit for separate reasons. I think there's value in, well, you know what? I'm just going to look for the number one guy to get the ball rolling. And I think sometimes they lack that. And I think Jordan Love's trying to process this wide array of targets. And especially when Detroit says, we're going to bust down the wall right away and see if we can't catch the Packers by surprise and really blitz. And I think that was really smart. Like in that situation, if you have one guy who you feel awesome about, instead of trying to process this whole, you know, ocean of targets, not, I love that they have lots of guys, but I'm not going to sit here high on my Packers horse and pretend like there aren't advantages to having a number one receiver too, because I think there are.
Of course there are. I think there's pros and cons, right? I think the con in the perspective of the Packers offense is you might cripple like the creativity and your ability to spread the ball around if you're honed in and focused on getting the ball to one person. And I think we a little bit overcompensate for like the Rodgers Devontae era where you're watching 12 just feed Devontae when other guys were open. That wouldn't be what this iteration of the Packers offense would do. It wouldn't be what Jordan Love would do. It wouldn't be what Matt LaFleur would call for. So I think in that respect, like if you had a more standout guy, you could work him in and not have it, like I said, cripple you in the way that did for the Packers offense. But I think at the same time, I just don't see the like glaring need for it at the moment. And it could be that there comes a time where there's an opening where they can't pay everyone on this wide receiver roster at some point. And somebody has to kind of step up and fill that hole, or they have to gain somebody new. But right now, you don't think that they have got to have it, guys, in those moments?
No, I don't know. And again, the point of comparison is tough because I'm watching Justin Jefferson, right? Or like if you're watching the Eagles, you're watching AJ Brown. It's like, okay, well, those are quite literally the best players in the world at that position. I think Dobbs can be that guy. He's been out a couple weeks. So that's maybe something that's off my radar a little bit. I think Wicks provides a lot of value in that department. And I don't think it's because he's a number one, but he's a guy, his skill set, right, getting open and getting open quickly, right, on a fourth and one, if we want to run a certain concept and Jordan Love needs to know that the guy's going to be open and the ball's going there, right, like they did with Devontae for so long. Or if you're in the red zone, right, and you're like, we just need you to be open exactly right here, right now. Like, I think Wicks can do that. The problem is he, you know, you can't really trust him to catch the ball all the time right now. So,
yeah.
No, I don't think they have a got to have it guy. Like, if you were to tell me Jordan Love, the pocket's closing in and he's got to give someone a chance, like, I don't know that there's anyone on this team I feel better about relative to everyone else.
See, to me, when I think of someone that I, and it's not the way that they run it, I'm thinking like my ideal scenario of in that moment, right? Got to have it, got to get the ball to someone. I'm thinking get it to Tucker Kraft. Because I think that he, A, catches everything, and B, monster yards after the catch guy. So if you're thinking, got to have it, got to move the chains, got to like just keep this offensive drive going. I'm saying dump it down to Kraft and he will get you that yardage. But it's the same goes for Josh Jacobs. I mean, we've watched Josh Jacobs take a check down like 40 yards. So I think they have guys. It just might not be in the traditional sense you're thinking of.
Well, and really quickly about Josh Jacobs, he serves one role of a number one wide receiver in that, you know, that's where the defensive game plan starts for the other team, right? Like they're going to build the boat around trying to stop that guy and open up other doors and windows in the process. That used to be Devontae Adams, and I don't know that they always had the personnel to take advantage of those doors and windows, or they didn't make the throws like Rodgers just went to Devontae Adams anyways, which worked a lot of the time. I think defensive coordinators, and Jacob said it 2 weeks ago when he was asked about his lack of rushing production, receiving yardage notwithstanding, he's like, yeah, because I think they're dedicating extra bodies, they're game planning for me. So that's not a wide receiver number one, but they do have a guy that's forcing the opposition to dictate terms and to show a little bit of their hand. And that can open up opportunities elsewhere. He's a running back, but that is, they are getting that part of having a number one wide receiver represented in Josh Jacobs.
This is the first time this Lions game that made me ponder the question a little bit more, just based on the way that the Lions played Green Bay and basically dared the Green Bay wide receivers to win on the outside. Couple things. You mentioned Justin Jefferson, AJ Brown. The Packers are currently sixth in scoring. The seventh team is the Eagles. The eighth is the Vikings. So like, yeah, they don't maybe have that number one wide receiver. They're still putting up a crap ton of points in three of those games, basically with Malik Willis, obviously a quarterback. So they're doing great job scoring points. It's not been a major issue. Again, this game made me question things a little bit more. I think it's just going to come down to the Packers and Matt LaFleur are going to be much better prepared for a defense. I think showing that same sort of hand, and they got better at it as the game went along, and they still put up 30 plus points in that game, even, you know, with the, you know, Lions basically daring Green Bay's wide receivers to win. So I'm mostly saying it's fiction, but I'm more keeping a little bit more of an eye on it after this past game than I have in the past, but I'm mostly on fiction as well.
And also really quickly, like if the strength of your wide receiving core is our threes and fours are better than everyone else's threes and fours and they can win, well, then they have to win and they can't drop passes, mm-hmm. right? So like if that's your strength and Wicks and, you know, let's say Dobbs, because Reed, I think is probably thought of a little higher. Like those guys have to be great. Like there's no room for them to have mental errors and drops in a game. Cause that's your strength is your three and your four. So that the threes and the fours can't have off nights is my point. If you are a, you know, a collective unit like that, to Andy's point.
All right. So let's move on past wide receivers, unless Perry yours is wide receiver esque, but I will let you go in any direction that you want.
Okay. I enjoyed that though. Where do I want to take this? Okay. The Packers are going to struggle to make a deep playoff push.
I'll go fact, because I think struggle is an interesting word here, and I'll let struggle do the heavy lifting. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be easy to go on a deep playoff push. So I will say that, yes, there will be a large struggle to get, you know, let's just say get to a Super Bowl, right? You're probably looking at going, you know, to maybe Seattle and then maybe to Detroit and then to either Minnesota or Philadelphia in that final game. Yeah, that is as big of a struggle as you can possibly get to the Super Bowl. So I absolutely think it's going to be a very difficult path, but I think that if they play their best brand of football, the biggest struggle is usually them getting in their own way. And if they can stop doing that, sign me up and I will take Green Bay having the potential to go on that run. But yeah, it's the position that they've put themselves in by being right now the third place team in the NFC North, the sixth place or the sixth seed team in the NFC in one of the, you know, really just ultimately brutal conferences right now. Yeah, it's going to be a struggle. Did I change your question too much?
No, I was thinking of it more in terms of like, do I feel like this team and the way that they're playing and the way that they've played this season, have they shown me that they can beat the teams that they will face in the divisional round, in the championship round? Like, do they have it in them to make that deep playoff push?
They do. I'll say they do. But Grant, go ahead.
Well, I can give you an answer that speaks more to that, because like when I went on the radio on Friday and I did 6 hours because Bill was off. So I did his show and then I did my show. And my like main thing about the Thursday night game is, we've kind of been right on this team for about a month, or at least some of the things that I've been saying is like, they feel like the third or the fourth at worst best team in the NFC with the capability of beating any team above them. Like, I think they're capable of beating the Lions. I think they're capable of beating the Eagles. They beat the Vikings, and you put the Vikings ahead of them right now. I think that's fair. The Vikings beat them, and they've looked awesome. But they are, at worst, the fourth best team in the NFC, and they can beat any of those teams, but they're we have them fourth best for a reason, right? Like, we've seen them lose close games to the Eagles and to the Lions and to the Vikings. So this kind of feels like a team, if the medium outcome, the median outcome for every team in the NFC kind of comes to fact, this is a team that can probably go on the road and win a playoff game in Seattle or in Atlanta or wherever, and then go and play an awesome game in Detroit or Philly and probably lose because those teams are really great. And that's kind of what they did last year. And that kind of feels like that's the spot they're in. I think they could do better than that. But to Andy's point, it's like, man, you know, unless there's a massive upset somewhere atop the NFC, you got to go win three road games. I think the Packers are great, and I think they can win on the road, but it's just a simple math problem. Like, everything falling your way for three straight games in the playoffs is hard enough, let alone if you're on the road in hostile environments. So I agree with Andy, but Perry, to your point, I watch this team. I'm like, they can beat anyone, but I don't know that I would feel great about them beating anyone right now. And I think that's what you're driving at, right?
Okay. That's how I feel, right? I feel like I see their ability to beat any of the teams that will be in the playoffs. Absolutely, unequivocally, they have it in them. They have the skill set. They've shown that they can. They haven't shown in the win column necessarily, but I think if you're looking at the season from like a more holistic standpoint, they can, in another head-to-head matchup, especially with the Eagles game being as, you know, wonky as it was, beat a good team. I need to see it against the Vikings. Like, I feel like if the Packers can go into Minnesota at the end of this season and handedly beat that Vikings team, I will feel better about them making this kind of like late fire stretch run in the playoffs like they did last season. But right now they keep falling on the wrong side of those games. And I don't see why that would be any different in the playoffs.
So that's fair. Like, I think of the Bucks, and it's crossing sports, but the year they won the title, they had all of these losses. If you go back and look at their schedule, they lost to the Suns by one, or they lost to the Nets by one. And it just felt like all of these games, especially later in the season, they're falling on the wrong side of. And then in the playoffs, right, they flip those results for whatever reason. It's a different sport. I think the Packers could beat anyone, but if they go to US Bank and they lose a similar game to the ones that they've lost, like, the resume is difficult. It's possible, but it's difficult to feel like it's going to happen, because right now they should probably be winless in the division if the Bears don't kick field goals like a bunch of dummies, right? And like, I think the Packers are great, but at a certain point you get enough of a sample and the wins and the losses and who the wins and losses are against, it's like they feel really good, just not quite as good as some of the best teams. And I agree, like, getting that Minnesota pelt on the wall to have something to go on, you know, into the playoffs, I think that's really important.
They've had four difficult games on the schedule: Minnesota, Detroit twice, and Philly, and they're 0-4. Like, that's your path to the playoffs, or like through the playoffs, right? Yeah. Is they're going to have to go 4-0 against a tough stretch of opponents, right? Whether, again, that's Seattle, Detroit, Philly, and then Buffalo or KC or whoever that might be, right? Like, that's your pathway to a Super Bowl, is winning four games like that. They've had four difficult opponents. They've gone 0-4. So to your point, Perry, do we think and believe that this team is capable of something like that? Sure. Have they shown us that? No, they clearly have not shown us that. All right, Grant, you're number two, and then we're going to go lightning round for our final three. So this, make this one your good one.
Yeah, this is the good one. And I'm stealing this from Dave Schrader at WBAY. He brought this up on Bill's show, and I'm like, damn, that's good. So the Packers, I wrote this out very specifically. The last couple weeks, the last couple roller coaster weeks, notwithstanding, Packers fans would perceive the first 2.5 seasons of Quay Walker very differently if he had just simply caught every interception that hit him in the hand. Changed nothing else about his career. If he just catches all of the picks that hit him in the hands, I'm saying Packers fans would talk about him, consider him way differently. Fact or fiction?
I'll say that it's a fact. I don't think it maybe should be a fact, but I think it's absolutely a fact. And the, you know, like, people love big plays, right? Like, if they see big plays, interceptions, like these sort of things, like, those resonate and just stick with you more. And for the most, like, the general fan, like the vast majority of fans, probably 95% of fans, aren't going and watching all 22 tape. They're not rewatching the game. They're not like, they're not going back and watching this thing with a fine tooth comb. So if Quay misses a few tackles here and there, but he's coming up with all these big interceptions, they're gonna be, I can live with a couple bit, you know, missed tackles for all these big plays that he's making. So they might label him as like a risk reward sort of guy or things like that, but the connotation is unequivocally different if he, you know, picks off all these passes that he's had an opportunity to pick off. So I'll say that's a fact.
Yeah, I was gonna say fact, but I don't know if that's a good thing or not. Right? Like, and for the same reason, like, people love splash plays, and those are not for nothing, like, huge game-changing plays. You know, those interceptions, they happen. Butterfly effect, wins and losses can be different. So it's not to say that that's not worth taking into consideration, but for a linebacker, it's not necessarily like what he should be doing. Like, those are interceptions that have kind of come his way. They were opportunities. They're not necessarily like things he should be going after. So I think to judge him, we should be looking at him on the things that he should be doing well, not the added bonus. And I view the interceptions as that added bonus that would band-aid the things he may or may not do well in his like role.
Yeah, you both got exactly the spirit of the point, which is like, I think fans would talk about him way differently. I think he'd by and large be the exact same player, right? But the way that we talk about him, and well, that was my, what I brought up with Watson too. It's like the way he is talked about by most doesn't really actually reflect the player that he is or the player that he's been. And if Quay Walker just catches a couple picks and it's documented, you can go back and look, like, he's had a bunch of them hit him right in the hands. And those are plays that can turn a playoff game. You're exactly right, Perry. So those aren't things that should just be thrown to the side as noise, because they're more than that. But Dave Schrader brought that up, and I'm like, damn, that's a good point. Like, if he just has a couple more picks, big game player, like you said, Andy, or big play player, like risk reward guy, like these things that us fans say, like, that, I think that would exactly be the case. Yeah.
Interestingly enough, do you know how many dropped interceptions that PFF has charted with him is in his career is? Any guesses?
Probably lower than the total we'd guess based on how PFF charts that stuff, but I don't know.
I'd say like four or five.
Four.
That's so many for 2.5 years.
Yeah, I suppose that's for 2.5 years for a linebacker, I guess. Like, but I get like when we're talking about this and I'm thinking of it as like, is it like six? Is it eight? Is it like how many has he dropped? But I guess four, like that's a lot, but I don't know. I still think if he picks off those four passes, yes, we're talking about probably a different conversation about Quay Walker, whether that should be the case or not. That's a good one.
The next Fred Warner. Just kidding.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's go lightning round. Perry, we'll start. I'll finish. I will go you, Grant, and then me, and we'll just go lightning round for this last one. Go anyone that you want to go with.
Okay. Matt LaFleur has what it takes to coach a team to a championship.
Unequivocal fact. No question about it. Wholeheartedly believe it in my soul. As much as I believed it, and I said it about Mike McCarthy before he won one, and I believed it in my soul, and I kept telling people over and over, and people are so, he's never going to win one. He can't win the big one, but he's going to win a Super Bowl. Just wait. He's going to win a Super Bowl. Matt LaFleur is going to win a Super Bowl as well. I believe it just as much as I did with Mike back in the day.
Do you think there's any such thing as a coach who gets tight in a big game? Like, do you think there are big game coaches and not big game coaches, or do you just think that's like noise?
Yeah, I think so, but I don't have any major concern. Like, Matt's won playoff games. Every one of those is big games. He's won big games in the past. Like, I don't think he shrinks in the moment or anything like that. I know people will point to like the, oh, I can't believe he kicked that field goal against Tampa Bay in 2020. I would have gone for the touchdown and the 2-point conversion in that situation, but I absolutely can understand why he went for the field goal. And like, analytically speaking, it makes a lot of sense of what he's trying to accomplish in that situation. So I've no major issue. And I have no doubt about it.
I defend coaches so much because I think so often it's like, guys, there's not a perfect choice. He took the one and it didn't work. And like, sometimes that's just coaching. Like, I don't know. I think I'm more likely to defend coaches than most. I have a stupid one that's a little bit of a throwback because I wrote this down watching the Vikings game today. Fact or fiction, watching what Jordan Addison was able to do opposite Justin Jefferson last year as a rookie and this year gives credence to the argument that maybe T. Higgins would have put them over the top.
fiction. This is not a big T. Higgins guy. Not a T. Higgins guy. He's also like missed a ton of games this year. So now I'm going totally fiction. T. Higgins changes nothing. In fact, it might make things worse.
No, I'm not. No, I don't love, I also just in general don't love revisionist history. I think it serves no one. And I'm
so excited for my next one.
Oh, great. Let's hear it.
All right. The Packers have made a massive mistake by taking Jordan Morgan over Cooper DeJean.
Okay. I don't know if that's revisionist history because that was this season.
But you're still revising the draft. You're revising a piece of history.
Look, Grant, you go.
Well, I was like, I can go because I was talking about this with a friend earlier today. I think it's going to prove to be a mistake to not address corner at all. I mean, they didn't touch it. I don't necessarily know that it needed to be with that pick. They had an extra third. They had lots of picks. And another thing, I don't think it's fair to ever complain about a GM taking O-line help because fans and NFL media people are the first to jump down the throat of a general manager who could have taken an O-lineman and didn't. So I just think it's unfair to fault him. And it's an O-line of 7th, 6th, 4th round picks, like adding a blue chip player with those traits in the first round into that group. I like that. I wish they would have addressed corner other spots in the draft. So I don't think that pick is a mistake. I wish they would have addressed corner later though, for sure.
All right. If we're sticking with our revisionist scenarios, I think if Jordan Morgan was healthy this season and playing, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. I think if he was contributing right now to this, and I don't disagree with Grant's point. Like, I think they needed to address corner and they didn't. But in that this exact scenario, when you're comparing two players, if Jordan Morgan is out there and playing well, I don't think we're even bothering with that discussion. I think we're having the broader discussion of why didn't they address corner, but we're not so harped on the Cooper DeJean thing.
Yeah, we've already covered the fact that corner has been somewhat of a mistake in some capacity for this team this year. They did not do enough. They didn't give themselves enough leeway at that position. I think that's not arguable at this point. My argument here is, can we give Jordan Morgan a hot second? Before we just say like, Cooper DeJean's unequivocally better than Jordan Morgan and Jordan Morgan's a bust, or like, I can't believe that. Can we give him a minute? Like, he, and it's been unfortunate due to injuries of like where he's been at right now, but like, can we give him a hot second just to even see what he can become? And I thought Daniel Jeremiah, this was not in regards to Jordan Morgan. I don't even actually know where the conversation was coming from, but this is a quote from Daniel Jeremiah, quote, "It's hard to have a great offensive line and be a terrible team." And I'm not saying, again, that we don't know if Jordan Morgan's going to help make them a great offensive line, and they've got a pretty darn good one right now, even without Jordan Morgan. But man, and then Robert Mays followed that up and quote tweeted it by saying, "I know a few teams that should write that on the wall of their facility." There are so many teams that are losing in the NFL right now because they cannot put a competent offensive line on the field. And we have seen, whether it's been an Alex Light or a Byron Bell or a Kyle Murphy or a Jason Spriggs, or we can go on and on, where you get one of those guys entered into an offensive line and it completely changes everything. And now you can't protect anything or do anything up front. And your quarterback suffers, and your huge franchise quarterback, Josh Jacobs, suffers. All your talented wide receiver suffers because you have a revolving door at one of those offensive line spots. So I know for me, even this year, when they had their six, like right now with Jordan Morgan being out, for example, when like all of a sudden one of those other offensive linemen goes down, like we saw a little bit this week with Sean Ryan going down, that was the first moment for me of like, now I like Kadeem Telford. I was actually fairly impressed with how he played in limited snaps in this one. But like, that's the first time I'm like, oh, okay, like this might actually be a problem. This could be an issue. Whereas when Jordan Morgan was next guy up, I feel like, all right, they're good to go. Like they're going to be able to continue to run their offense with Jordan Morgan in there. So to me, let's give the dude a hot second and see what he can become, because he might be a really good offensive lineman.
But this is what I mean. Like, if he was there and starting and playing, like, we would not be having this conversation, because you can never argue against protecting your quarterback who you just paid, who is everything to this franchise, which was the entire argument for the pick in general in April. So, no. Also, you saying Byron Bell triggered me.
I heard Jason Spriggs. And that was the one that, or who was the guy from, there's another one in that mix, Jason Spriggs adjacent. But one more point on offensive line depth, and this is an angle that you didn't hit, Andy. Like, it's also about having guys in the hopper for next year when you have to think about giving contracts to certain guys. And I think John Runyon Jr. is an incredible example. And I liked that guy. He loved being a Packer. He was on with us at Radio Row at the Super Bowl, like 10 out of 10 dude. I don't want to be the team paying him his first big deal. He's fine. But like, I would rather slide in my Jordan Morgan or my Jacob Monk. Like, I want those guys in waiting, because then you become one of those bad teams. It's like, oh, we need a guard. Shoot, we're going to pay, you know, $20 million per John Runyon Jr. while we let Saquon and Xavier McKinney walk out the door. Like, you just keep your priorities financially in balance when you always have those offensive linemen in the hopper. So I don't have a problem with the Jordan Morgan pick at all. I have a problem with the way that they handled corner, but that's a completely separate issue. I like that pick in the player.
Fair. Well, Sarah, before we get out of here, one last fact or fiction. The fact or fiction, the Packers will beat the Seahawks on Sunday.
Fact. I don't know if you guys remember, but in our bye week episode, I said the Packers would only lose one game out of the bye. So
I said they got undefeated against the NFC North. I was wrong clearly about that so far. So that has not come to fruition. All right, Grant, fact or fiction?
I'll say fact, because the Seahawks want to run the ball. And I think the defense is at issues, but they've been able to stop the run. And I think they've sacrificed success elsewhere to do it. But the fact that they've been able to do it, I think, gives them a puncher's chance in a matchup like Seattle. And I think they're better than Seattle and they'll have the rest. So I'll say fact. Yeah.
Winners of 4 in a row, those Seattle Seahawks on the road in a place where it's been a little bit of a nightmare fest. Anytime Green Bay's gone to Seattle, for the most part, I think we can think of a couple off the top of our heads. Packers do open as favorites in that game, 2.5 points favorites in Seattle. So should be an interesting one. All right. Any final thoughts before we get out of here?
Simon Stepaniak. That was the name I was trying to think of. There, I got it.
You never played a game. Simon Stepaniak was the John Runyon Jr. Draft, along with, who is the other one? John Runyon Jr., Simon Stepaniak, and, oh, now that's going to bother me. There was one of, that was the time they drafted three offensive linemen in the same draft.
Jake Hansen? Jake Hansen?
Maybe it was Jake Hansen. I think you might be right.
This is so dumb. I'm glad I thought of Stepaniak, though. That was going to bother me. No other final thoughts, though. This is a fun pod. I like fact or fiction. I felt like I had better prompts than when we did bold predictions. I think I let everyone down that episode, and I wanted to make it up to you guys.
It was Ben Stepaniak, yes. Those were the 3 sixth-round offensive linemen that they took in that particular draft, that 2020 draft that didn't produce really much of anything except for their franchise quarterback, which seems kind of important. All right, Perry, final thoughts for you?
No, this was fun. I dittoing Grant. I enjoyed this a lot. I enjoyed the discussion, and I'm excited about this. I'm excited about the Seahawks game. I got to see the Seahawks play live because I went to the Seahawks Jets game, and they're very volatile. They're very inconsistent. They're just like not a team that you can really predict all that much on at the moment. So it should make for an interesting game, interesting matchup. But I think the Packers are a better team.
And when Geno Smith throws you the ball, you have to catch it. I think that is along that Quay Walker conversation we had, like, he's going to throw you a few and you cannot drop it when he does.
What could go wrong? I thought you were going to say, Perry, of like, I totally agree with Grant. He did step it up a lot more this podcast over the last one. Like, that's amazing. You guys are the absolute best. Thank you so much for being here with me every other week. I always enjoy it. You're not allowed to miss any more of the season. People were very upset that you guys were gone and had to deal with just me. So make sure to follow her on Twitter at Perry_Goldstein. You can find him at Wisco Grant. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. That is going to do it for us today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.